It's all golden to me.
It's my dream to have a golden beard.
Younger but looks older.
I'll even try a squat. Here we go. The 6 of clubs.
The golden.
Welcome to another episode of the Talk Golden to Me video podcast show. Your host, Evan Golden, a.k.a. Golden TV, as always here at the studios at the Berman Law Group. Today, I'm excited to bring you a special guest. This man has literally traveled the world, not by feet, not by air, but by bike cycle. I'm bringing a professional cyclist. He's been on the Tour de France. He's just now created a revolutionary app that is just changing cycling forever, from exercise, nutrition, to working out, to cycling as a group. Pretty remarkable stuff. So in studio with us today, all our viewers that are watching, here is the man himself, Tom Danielson, retired professional cyclist. Welcome to the Talk Golden to Me video podcast show.
Yeah, thanks, Evan, for having me on, and it's pretty cool to be on a podcast that's not about cycling, so pumped to get out there and talk to some different
people. We want to talk about everything. We want to talk about life. We want to talk about the fish on your hat. We want to talk about the person, Tom Danielson. So, yeah, we're glad we could branch you out, because obviously there's more to you than just cycling, even though it's obviously a huge part of your life, huge part of your legacy, and what you've done as a professional athlete is just – pretty impressive, man. Just thinking what you've done and the training behind it, and maybe a lot of our viewers and listeners aren't too keen on professional cycling and what goes into it and how many miles and who you're racing against, but you're retired now. Let's start right here. Let's look back at your career as a professional cyclist. You hold so many records. Literally, the list just keeps going on and on and on, man. How do you put your career as a cyclist into words?
Yeah, I mean, it started as a childhood dream. I'm from East Lyme, Connecticut. Now I'm residing in Colorado. But, you know, as a kid, I wanted to be a pro athlete. And, you know, I wasn't good at all the other normal sports, the ball sports, right? I'm smaller and maybe not as coordinated. So I just kind of like fumbled through that stuff literally and got to found a bike and that just took off. And, you know, I think when you're someone that is struggling in other sports and you find that thing you're good at, you just go all in, right? And I just from there till now, just completely all in, buried my head and just worked hard, loved the hard work. And, you know, so started on mountain biking, won a lot of races on my mountain bike, my parents made me go to college in Colorado. So I chose a school that had a mountain bike team, Durango, Colorado, at Fort Lewis College. And at that point, that was where I found road bikes, got on the road bikes, and that really gave me an opportunity to climb. So I'm by trade a climber, a cyclist, right? So they have different types. And because I'm small, lightweight, but I can produce a lot of power, I'm someone that basically goes uphill fast, right? So the road bikes really gave me an avenue for that. And that's when the sort of Tour de France dreams came into play. And I was getting towards the end of my collegiate career. I did a double major, one in business marketing and then one in psychology, and was getting ready to leave. And I knew like I had to put it together if I wanted to get or not get a real job. So I again went all in and made it happen, turned pro, and then the rest, right? That's kind of the rest is history. Won a bunch.
So you kind of took a gamble, man, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what sports is all about is taking risks, right? Sure. And, you know, professional athletes really are very, very good risk takers. And so, you know, from a young age, I learned, okay, like, what is that? What is my risk possibilities here? And how can I put it all on the line but still have enough, you know, traction to stay on course if it all blows up? So,
but I mean, listen, every kid's riding a bike when they're growing up. How did you know, like, dude, I could do – were you just riding on one wheel? Did you just know right away that you had skills superior than your friends? I mean, everyone's riding with their crew in their neighborhood down the streets going to the candy store.
Well, you know, cycling really wasn't cool, right, then? So it was kind of like a way to go to McDonald's to get a root beer float, right? So – I think that's really where it started for me. It was like a mile ride to go get the – I think it was a Coca-Cola float, actually, and go get that.
And hey, you ride back with a Coca-Cola float without spilling any. That's impressive right there.
No, so being a cyclist means you know how to eat quickly. So
you chugging them.
Yeah, you can't be riding and eating. So definitely pounded it and head back really, really, really fast. But, yeah, I mean, like at first, I guess I didn't have any clue. And then my neighbor down the street was riding in races, was competing in races. And I was like, you know, I should try that. And so I did my first race. I got second. And that was really like the first time in my life where I was like, wow, I'm really good at something. And at the same time, I was kind of pissed off. I got second, right, where I've been getting my clock clean in every other sport. And
that,
then I was,
that probably made you hungrier.
Oh, second. For sure.
You win it there. You're like, yeah, this is too easy. I don't want to do it.
I guess. I don't know. But I guess for whatever reason, I remember the race was called Meadow Muffin Madness, right? So it was like in this cow pasture, and you just basically like rode around all these like cow patties. And for whatever reason, I fell in love with this.
You don't want to fall.
You don't want to fall. No, no way.
Dude, my quads are hurting thinking about that. You're like, dude, I wasn't a cyclist. I was a climbing cyclist. Like, my quads are just burning thinking about, I mean, look, I'm born and raised in Florida, so I don't know about, the only hill I've ever seen is the dump. That's like the only mountain I've seen. So I never had to bike down mountains or up mountains. I mean, that, I know how bad that just burns, man. Let me see those quads.
No, the quads are small. And you know, in high school, I kind of got made fun of it because it was like...
For real?
Well, yeah, like, I'd be winning these races. It would be, like, in the newspaper, and all, like, my classmates would be, like, skeptical. They'd be like, are you really good at cycling, or is there just no one that does it? Like, how can you beat anyone with those tiny little legs? And so for cycling, it's really about power to weight. So you want to be as powerful as possible, but as light as possible. So it's kind of like car racing, right? You want these super huge engines in these you know, vehicles that are really light, so they can go super fast. In cycling, a big part of it is up mountains. So, you know, who has the least amount of weight with the most power really ultimately is the fastest. So it's a trade-off for sure.
See, I wasn't thinking that. I'm thinking like I need to see huge calves and quads and just like these two like horse legs that are just powering through it. But yeah, that makes sense when you describe it.
Yeah. Yep.
Physiology behind it, man.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, and I become a coach now, so it's really a game of efficiency as well. You know, I think a lot of people out there when they first start a sport like cycling, they are really concerned about the absolute, you know, fitness that they have. But like any other sport, having that efficiency and having the ability to tell your muscles exactly what to do is more about the sport than absolute force. So it's been kind of a cool journey as a coach afterwards, trying to teach people how to become better at cycling and realizing maybe as I was a pro, maybe I had been spending maybe too much energy on like getting stronger, getting lighter, when really it's about being super, super dialed and efficient in the right ways.
That's cool that you're sharing your gift and your knowledge. Some people are like bitter. They're like, I'm not going to share my tips and tricks.
I think
because these young guys are going to break your record one day. You know,
yeah,
that, right?
Yeah. Some of them already have, right? I had the opportunity to work with some young guys that already are really successful. So, but for me, for whatever reason, I think, you know, we'll probably get to that, but the way my career ended, I think that it's really put me in a different position where, you know, you see a lot of pro athletes, they're not very interested in teaching people the sport. They are quite bitter. A lot of us are really like individuals. We're you know, introverts. We don't really like to talk to people. So I think, you know, that for a lot of pro athletes to be good at your sport, you're spending so much time by yourself and you're almost like overly selfish. It's hard to find someone that's really genuinely interested in other people. And for whatever reason, that's just, it's my why, right? Mm-hmm. It's really why, it's my purpose, why I'm doing this. And now I look back at my career, I realize that the thing I love the most about being a top level athlete is inspiring people. I really loved inspiring people to do things that they didn't think were possible. And now looking back at that, I understand that a lot better.
Man, that's so cool of you, man. You're a great human being. That's what you are.
Thanks.
And we appreciate that. And we appreciate you sharing your gifts. And you're not only just sharing it from a coaching perspective, you've created a whole business out of it, a whole platform, which is now Cinch Cycling. So please share with our viewers, our listeners, a little bit about this whole method, this whole performance applications that are now available.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I retired and started, you know, looking for a post cycling career. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. And I went, you know, I went out in the workforce. I asked people, from being a top level athlete, I had a lot of, you know, high level connections. So I went to a lot of the CEOs and people, and I said, what should I do? Like, what am I going to do with my life? Like, I need to move on. I need to earn an income. I don't really know what I'm going to do. And I think now it probably should, you know, I think I should share what happened to me. I basically lost my cycling career from a positive drug test. So my drug test came from a contaminated supplement that was connected to forces outside of my own and basically ended my career for something that wasn't my fault. And what was ironic about it was, you know, I had been part of the sport with doping, right? Like, I had been during that era, I had participated in it. I couldn't handle that. I ended up leaving that era. I left the team that I was on. I left that all behind by my choice. Started a team, which was the first ever, like, you know, transparent team called Slipstream Sports. And on that team, you know, basically move the sport forward along with other people to clean up the sport, and we did. It was a really cool effort. It was massive. It changed the game forever. But having this positive test after, you know, admitting to that in my past, it really ultimately just ended my career, because there was no way that people were really going to believe me and say, oh yeah, you did that in your past. You know, how are we going to, you know, believe that that's what's going on? And I think, you know, a lot of the sponsors and the people that were involved with the sport wanted to just close the door on people like myself, where it was kind of like, you know, we had come forward, we had talked about what was going on in the sport. But, you know, I think a lot of the sponsors and a lot of the directors, they just wanted to move forward with, like, fresh faces that were, like, didn't have tainted past, like people like myself. So when this happened to me, it was, you know, I wasn't ready to retire. Not at all. You know, I was at the peak of my career. I had everything going for me. And in fact, my test came before my favorite race, the race that I, Tour of Utah, I'd won it two times already, was ready to win it again. Shape of my life and just my whole career was ripped out from underneath me. And, you know, so like cycling to me started a completely new path and a new journey in my life because of that, right? At first, you know, I felt kicked out, abandoned by the sport, right? And I went to all these people and I said, you know, guys, help me. I need a job. You know, I don't have my career. And ultimately, like, being a professional cyclist was my identity. So now here I am, no money, you know, no career, and like lost my identity. I'm out like on people's doorsteps at these other businesses and saying, hey guys, like, should I work for you? Like, you know, I have a business degree, I have a psychology degree, like I think I can do it. And all the owners, they said, nope. You need to start a business. You're too good. You've got too much behind you. You know, you have this story, you have all this, like, put this together and make this into something. And I'm like, well, this is the sport that hates me. And I felt that way. I had people that would spit on, guys, I live in Boulder, Colorado, which is like the capital of cycling in the US.
And you can't live there without a mountain bike.
You can't live there without a bike. That's for sure. And, you know, I was pretty like famous cyclist in this area. So I've got people everywhere judging me, you know, saying mean things to me. And, you know, these businesses are telling me, start a business in cycling here. And I'm like, I think everybody hates me. Like, they don't want me. And they're like, no, like, share your information. Like, if you can help people, people want help. Like, find a way to help people with what you have and you'll have a business. So I started doing cycling camps. So I had already dabbled in that business. I had sort of a brand. I called it Tommy D Cycling Escape, right? It was this cycling camp that I did, and I basically taught people cycling for a week. And they said, well, why don't you start by resurrecting that and doing that? And I changed the name. I took my name out of it because I was embarrassed. I thought everybody hated me. So I came up with a name, and actually my wife helped. Courtney helped me with this name, and we called it Cinch, which was – basically what I did in these camps was take high level cycling and simplify it and teach it in ways that people can understand it. So we started doing that. Down in Tucson, Arizona, we started Cinch Cycling Camps. And believe it or not, people came in the door. We were surprised, right? And at first, it wasn't that many. Two or three people were doing these camps. One of the camps, we had one person, and they broke their collarbone on day one, and which was a bummer. But I found a way to help teach them cycling, right? Took them through the whole ER process, showed them how to, you know, I had broken some collarbones, right? So I showed them how to get over that and get back on the bike and the trainer. And that camp was kind of fun because we took them on the trainer, like still doing workouts 2 days after surgery. So that was kind of cool. Wow. But yeah, so that was the beginning. And when I was at these camps, when we started to have more momentum, people asked me, they said, well, would you coach me? Would you do what you're doing at these camps, but all the time at my house, online? And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that, because I had thought like cycling coaching was a joke, because, you know, in my past life, right, in cycling, a lot of these cycling coaches are just basically regurgitating these plans, right, and saying, oh, 3 times 10 minutes, 3 times 20 minutes, zone 2, zone 3, all this generic stuff. And I'm like, no, the sport, that's not even the sport. So I said, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to coach you. I don't do that. But I'll teach you cycling. we'll call it something else. And that's how it started. Is I started with one person, and turns out they liked it. And more people started to ask me. They say, hey, I heard you're coaching. And at the time, I'm still trying to sell these cycling camps. And I'm telling these guys, hey, well, I might do coaching, but I've got these cycling camps. You need to come to it. People are like, well, would you coach me? And then that was the first time we ended up pivoting, right? Is I said, okay, I think people want the coaching and less the camps. Maybe we'll still do the camps, but with only the coaching people. And we pivoted, and we that's when we turned Cinch into Cinch Cycling, what it is now, which is a coaching business, and we moved away from the cycling camps. We still do cycling camps, but we do it with our coaching clients. So it works out.
What a story. What a story. Unbelievable. And now the camps and the classes are internationally, because it's all now digital, correct? So anybody could take advantage of the Cinch courses?
Yeah. So it's basically one-on-one coaching, right? So that's, in my mind, the best way for people to learn cycling. You really need someone there to help you with it. You know, there's a lot of, obviously, like, give me the workouts or tell me what to do. But I really think to have the maximum impact, you really need to have someone there that can understand you and guide you through. It's such a complex sport. There's so many details to it, and people are going through so many transitions in their life, physically, mentally, work-wise, emotionally. You really need someone to help you integrate the cycling in. So we created a system that's, you know, a way to coach as if I'm there, but online. And the reason for this was, you know, our demographic was really these educated people that had, you know, successful jobs that really were balancing time and their cycling. So whether it was, you know, family, business, work, all of those things above, other relationships, like those were all key components. So we had to figure out a way that people could learn cycling, get better at it. But do it in their time. So even like my neighbor, who's a client, right, we have to work with them online, even though they're there, right, because they're riding at 5 a.m. before work. So it's not possible really for me to go to their house at 5 a.m, you know, and they don't want me there either. So really, really important to make it in a way that it fits people's lifestyles and it integrates into them. So, you know, created this system, which I call the Form Performance Method. And this is kind of, I actually wrote a book on this. It's coming out this March. So look for that if you guys are interested. But I coach cycling in 4 pillars. So you have a fitness, which is your strength, speed, and endurance. And this is really what most people focus on. And I think this is kind of just the welcome to the sport place, right? You've got to have the ability to have the fitness, right? But it's just like welcome to cycling, right? There's so much more to that. The next pillar is execution. Execution is skill and strategy. So cycling is really a sport. It's not an exercise. Exercise is a part of it. You can use it for exercise, but it's a sport, and that's really what makes it great. And in America, people don't know about the sport. you know, you mentioned when I came in here, you know, get people off the Peloton bike and get them onto the roads. I mean, you know, they can still stay on the Peloton bike, but let's teach them the sport. And so they can do stuff on that bike where they can understand, hey, like I'm playing cycling, I'm doing the sport, I understand this. Because there's so many different things. So that execution pillar is really key, doing things with your cadence, right? So if you look at it, like other sports, maybe the motorsports, RPMs is a big part of the game. Cycling is the same thing, but people use RPMs in cycling as sort of a way to pass the time. But it's not a way to warm up, and it's not a way to cool down. It's a way to perform. So learning how to use your engine, your physical engine, with your mechanical engine using cadence is a really awesome, huge component. So we, you know, I teach a lot of that in that execution thing. Another thing is body position. So the bike is basically, cycling is a way you're, when you're riding, you're basically building and generating torque. So torque is the force that you put on your crank. So it's going in a circle. That's not as simple as people think, just slamming your foot down and pulling your foot up. The way you put your force on that crank totally changes the outcome of how your bike moves. So the way that you change the torque is through cadence, like we just talked about, but also body position. So this is where we can add sort of almost like a martial arts component to cycling, right? Is we're bringing in different body positions, different ways that you hold your hands, your elbows, your arms, your core, your pelvis. Sorry, I keep talking so loud. You know, all these different things, right, that you can do with your body completely change what the speed and how your bike handles and, you know, goes around corners, accelerates, it decelerates, move around groups. You know, a lot of our clients, you know, out there are doing races and are doing group rides. What you do on your bike dramatically changes that. So many people are obsessed with like, man, I'm scared of groups. It's like, well, I'm not going to help you overcome your fear like with some magic trick or, you know, hypnosis, right? Like, I'm going to teach you actually how to handle your bike. I mean, you take your car out on – I mean, just driving here, I'm driving 75 miles an hour on I-95, right? There's a lot of stuff going on there. If I was actually on the hood of my bike without any – or on the hood of the car without any sort of control, that would be terrifying. But because I have a steering wheel and brakes and all this other stuff that I've learned how to use, I feel safe. So, you know, you guys can all think of your first driving experience on the highway. It was terrifying, and now you're comfortable. So it's the same sort of thing. That's how you become better and feel more comfortable in groups or at high speeds. So, you know, I could go on and on about the execution pillar, but super high level, super cool, and it really makes the sports incredibly fun. The nutrition pillar, this is one that a lot of people get really excited about. And this is basically looking at ways to fuel your cycling. So I like to think of adding instead of subtracting. So a lot of people think of the nutrition component in life is like, well,
what do I have to stop?
Right? What can I stop or take away to get more out of life? And it doesn't work that way, unfortunately, right? Like you take away.
I like that approach because people are looking for the right things to put in. We know what we're not supposed to have, right?
Yeah, and I'm a big transformation guy. So, you know, like my story, like I talked about and I alluded to, right? I had a massive transformation in my life that changed everything for me. So I want the same for my people. And I think that, you know, fueling is a massive way to transform. And you want to transform by feeding yourself the right things at the right time in the right amounts. And that's, we call it the three sigmas of nutrition, right? So you have purpose, composition, timing. The way you do those three sigmas completely changes the outcome. And this is how you transform, because if you're fueling and then doing, you actually mold and turn into the right thing that you're trying to become. And too often people are trying to do the Houdini again, where they're saying, well, why don't we work backwards? I want to look like this. I want to be shredded, right? So I'll just not eat anything and I'll go like low carb or whatever. But I want to be shredded so I'm super fast, right? So it's like, well, yeah, you get turned into a toothpick and you can see your muscles, but turns out your muscles can't do anything. So then you got to do stuff with them. And guess what? You end up back in the same place as you were before. So, you know, really leading with the idea of fueling what, you know, your nutrition, your performance, and your body transforms and molds around what you're actually, who you are. You actually are becoming it rather than trying to act like it. Big difference, big, you know, performance change, big transformation. And the last one, the last pillar, this is my favorite, I call it focus, but it's the mindset component of cycling. And this is really where me as a coach, I have a lot of fun, because I think that cycling is a sport that can give you so much more than the experience that you have on your bike, right? As we all know, sports is a lot like life. For whatever reason, cycling just takes it to another level, because there's just so many things going on, right? There's like fear, there's speed, there's the risk taking, but then you kind of have to have all the discipline, the hard work, the consistency. Then you get to travel, see all different things. You get that community, meet all kinds of different people. Mentally, there's just so much going on around the sport of cycling. So for me as a coach, like, I needed to build ways for people to, I call it, drive with your mind. So you're leading with your brain and you're taking control of your environment through your actions. It's a really cool concept. It sounds simple, but it's a cinch, right? But it really takes a lot of hard work and a lot of focus. But if you do it, you do learn how to drive with your mind, and it's so empowering, right? And when we talk about drive with your mind, you're connecting all the different levels of the things that we just talked about. You're driving your fitness, you're driving your nutrition, you're driving your skills and strategy, but you're in control. And so many people, they do just the opposite when they ride their bike, right? They're reacting to their environment. They're not being proactive, they're reacting. So if there's a hill, like you mentioned, they feel that their quads hurt. Right. If there's a downhill, they feel that they're scared. Right. If there's a tailwind, they feel that they're happy. Right. And they're just not in control. Right. You're a complete victim. You're set in in life.
I think the last pillar is what really separates the professionals from the elite. And I think when you have that mind, that focus, because like I'm the biggest proponent of that. You know, you look at any sport, they're all great athletes. They all whatever, running the 40 or running, jumping. Above the shoulders is what separates the true champions, the true professionals, and the kind of the ultimate supreme, you know, contenders or in that case, you know, challengers. So it's pretty. I couldn't agree with you more when you talk about the focus element. I'm glad that's kind of the key main pillar. You said that's your favorite pillar.
Yeah, well, I think everybody, I mean, not just the elite, I think everybody needs it, right? Like what you said, that's what separates the people. But there's no reason why, you know, the next person that, you know, that comes to me, or the, you know, someone that's trying to move up the ranks in their career, or you know, an athlete that's just trying to make a next level on their group ride, or whatever you know, objective or relationship that you personally want to have, like anytime you want to level up your life, right? Like the same things that helps someone like myself win a stage in the Tour de France, right, is the same thing that's going to help you get to what you want next. And that's really the concepts that we're teaching here at Cinch, is saying, hey, like, let's crush this like a Tour de France champion, right, rather than saying, hey, like, I think this works or this, you know. No, let's drive with your mind. Let's take control. It's crazy out there. It's crazy hard. We get that, but here's a solution, and I think everybody of all levels can really benefit from it.
That's cool that you said all levels, because we don't want to scare anyone obviously away. So I'm so curious to find out, after all those different pillars, everything you've shared, how they make that into a cinch. So very cool, and the only way you could find out, let's plug them, is go to Cinch Cycling or download the app. Very cool, innovative workouts. I love the communication, interaction with you, and then, which I think people love to crave, which you kind of alluded to, is the community of all the different riders now utilizing the Cinch system and the classes and the workouts. So I can't believe you turned that into Cinch. So cyclists out there, take advantage and download this and get involved, because it's pretty innovative, and learn directly from a true professional. Can't get better than that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and we have an awesome team of coaches. So, you know, as we've grown, we've taken on new people, and the way that I've scaled out is take athletes that have been really high performers over the last 4 years with me that you know, are showing interest and becoming coaches. And, you know, they have already been here with me for 4 years as you know, sort of a apprentice. And these are the perfect people that it's all right, like, you're going to come stay with me and we're going to go through this. And so we've created some pretty badass coaches as well to help me out. And it's been a really fun experience.
Awesome, man. Listen, congratulations on you being able to create this business. So successful, so innovative, and it's very cool. And all cycling, as not just exercise, as a sport, needs to be embraced. And here's the great tool to kind of take your game to the next level. And for you, man, to overcome adversity, to be ripped of your true passion, your love, you had some roads you could have went down, and I'm sure you maybe almost thought about going down that road or dealt with that, but to come on top and have a positive mindset and attitude and take it as a life lesson, and look, the whole cliche, everything happens for a reason. Look at what you're doing now for other cyclists and passing the sport down to so many other people, man. That was your kind of your road, man. So I'm sure you've accepted it at this point. Was it hard to kind of to overcome that adversity?
It was massively hard, and I think that's why I'm so passionate about this. Is, you know, I absolutely truly love what I do. I get up at 5 in the morning and start working then, and you know, I work all day long. I'm so in love with what I'm doing now that it's actually hard for me to understand my purpose when I'm training on my bike, and it's actually taken some change and some, you know, personal growth to figure out and say, okay, you know, my training now, my races, my workouts, like those are around helping and discovering new ways to teach people and back to inspiring people. But, you know, just that process of changing, you know, my identity, transitioning and almost, you know, reinventing myself, that at the time it was a very like rough, tumble, nasty, horrible experience. But now looking back, like I would be nothing without that. In fact, you know, this is kind of an interesting story. I've been getting into public speaking. I'm really into sharing this message and using it to inspire people, you know, off the bike, right? The audiences that are doing other things in cycling, but using the same cinch tools and empowering people with them and showing them how to transform. So I've been doing some public speaking, and I did my biggest talk was for a big university conference out in South Carolina, and the group of people that were listening, for whatever reason, I kind of freaked out before my talk, and I thought, you know, I'm not, I feel that they might look down on me to hear my story, right? And I thought, you know what, I've got this transformation talk, I'm going to use something from my pro career, right? Because yeah, being a pro cyclist and transforming at that level to different things is a great story. So I changed my talk. I left out the dirty, burned, like horrible experience transformation, and I used more of a, in my, I thought, a prettier version, right? And then at the end of the talk, like I just felt that it wasn't as good, and I felt like the audience was less connected, and you know, than the other ones that I had done. And afterwards, you know, I reflected on it, and I talked to some of my friends and the people that were there, and everyone was like, well, why did you pivot? And I'm like, I just felt like that audience needed like a more flowery version. And it, at that moment, it just totally hit me. I'm like, I'm nothing without that story. Like that story like captivates people. Like they can feel it. It's massive adversity. It's true rising again. And from that point on, I realized that I could not be where I am today and have the power and have the strength and the force and the intensity and the drive had I not had that part. And in fact, it's now part of like one of my processes, right? I call it the phoenix, right? Is I, you know, the phoenix, the bird itself, it actually has to burn to get to the next level, right? And I think that this is true in life. If we want to get, just go back to exercise. If you want to get fitter, you have to burn, right? You have to have pain. You have to overcome it. You have to learn how to leverage that pain into pleasure, right? The pain never goes away. You could take painkillers, right? But it's still there, right? It's still doing its thing. You can like confuse yourself interpreting it, but that's not the purpose, right? The purpose is to take that pain and leverage it and turn it into pleasure. That's what you alluded to before, like pro athletes, how do they use their mind? Well, that's exactly what they do, is they take their relationship with pain and they leverage it and they turn it into pleasure. So like all those hard workouts, all those hard rides, all those failures, if it's in the race context, a lot of times a pro athlete will use that, leverage it, and make something great out of it. But for whatever reason in life, when things like that happen to me, you lose your career, right? You have a relationship that fails, right? You get someone says something mean to you, whatever it is. We feel pain. A lot of times we think that pain is something negative because it's something wrong with us, but it's not, right? That thing is your fire. That's your Phoenix. That's the way to burn, right? Leverage that and turn that into something great. Go back to me, like making it in my cycling early on. It was because I got rejected by so many other sports, right? That's why I had the hunger when I got on the bike. If I came out of the womb and someone handed me a bike, I might not appreciate it. I might not have that hunger and drive. So I'm actually obsessed now with this whole concept of burning and teaching people that, hey, it's okay to have pain, right? And anytime someone breaks an arm or loses their job or, you know, even has a disease or whatever, right? I say, hey, guys, this is your moment, right? Let's turn this on. Let's burn. Let's get to the next level. Let's transform. This is it. And my story, right, is my authentic experience to be able to share that. And who I am today is 100% because of that massive failure, because of that massive experience that was at the time so negative. Now it's so positive.
You learn a lot more in life, I think, when you take the L than the wins. So I think losses, how you bounce back, how you react from it, how you overcome from it, that's where you learn the life lessons, and that's how you become the person you're meant to be. I 100% agree with that, man. That's cool stuff, man. Who knew Tom, the Phoenix Danielson, had that inside of him, man? Unbelievable stories. And listen, in life is not always fair. And there's a lot of people that have been ripped or have just been down a wrong road or had something that just didn't go their way. And it's kind of how you bounce back. You're not alone. Like you said, you're utilizing in everyday life situations, whether it's in the business world, the corporate, you know, it doesn't matter. People have had that type of adversity. So
yeah, and I think like the key to that is, you know, to moving forward, for especially like with something that's not your fault or it is your fault, is just owning it. Because as soon as you own it, you actually have control of it. So like take my positive test and the way my career ended, I like treaded water for months, right? Trying to find a way to go back and get the people, you know, responsible for this and prove to the world that I was innocent, right? But if you looked at the facts and you looked at like, yeah, I had done that in my past, right? Like, it's unlikely to think that someone's going to be like, oh, well, maybe you proved this, but who's to say that you just didn't come up with an excuse or a way out of it or whatever? So I took an opportunity and I just completely owned it. And I said, you know what? Like I put that supplement in my mouth. Like that had my, you know, that was my fault. Like I'm in this situation, you know, even though it was not like I intended to do it or whatever, just taking control by owning it and saying, you know what? This happened to me, whatever. I'm moving forward. Here we go. And just the act, it changes everything, right? Because you're not trying to – I'm not telling that story when people ask me, hey, what happened?
How can you own something that wasn't true? How can you own it when you didn't do it?
You just own that it happened to you. You just say, hey, it happened to me.
That I need to go back to that pillar of focus, because that's a tough one to swallow.
But it makes you invincible, because if you can do that, you can move and maneuver around anything. And because like let's look back what I was doing. I'm sitting there trying to get my career back. What are the ways to do that? Well, I have to put together this giant case, and I have to take these people to court, and I have to prove that this was this person's fault, and this was this person's fault, and here we go. Time, money, all this stuff is wasted. At the end of the day, like, am I going to get it back? No. The reality is no. Like, there's too much time. There's too much damage that happened. It's just not going to happen. The second that I saw that, I had so much freedom and I could just go forward. And it turns out, right, that like people like damaged people, right? Like people that are messed up, they relate to a lot of people. So as soon as I started saying, hey, I'm Tom, the guy that whatever you heard about me or like I'm here to help you, right? I've got stuff wrong with me. I've got people saying bad stuff about me. I've done bad stuff. But look, I want to use all that to help you, and I have the tools to help you. Right? Somebody's going to say yes. Someone's going to be like, hey, like that guy's truly authentic, right? Other people, right? They might say, hey, no, I want to have nothing to do with you. Okay, that's fine, right? You just keep doing that until all of a sudden it's clear that people start to see, and they're like, that guy is authentic. He is truthfully in this position. Like this truly, truly is who he is and what he's doing. It's so much faster and so much easier than sitting there and going back to all those people that are saying, hey, you did this. And then you go back to them on Twitter or whatever and say, oh, no, I didn't. I mean, to this day, which is it's the most amazing freedom, is looking at all those negative comments like on my Instagram and on my Twitter and just being totally free for them and saying, you know what, that doesn't bother me. Like, I understand where you're coming from. I'm sorry that you feel that way, but that's not who I am, and that's not how I'm living my life. And I actually don't have any time or any interest in responding back to you. I'm going to move forward and do – because I have a lot of awesome stuff that I want to do in my day today.
Dude, I can only applaud you, man. I can only applaud you because there's so many people, so many of our viewers, listeners, everybody has been dealt with a situation like that. But you have to make a choice. You have to own it, and you have to understand why it happened and where it's going to lead you and believe it and kind of trust the whole process. It's pretty remarkable, though. You do need a lot of focus. You need a lot of mental, mind, power, strength, and positivity. So you've accomplished it, and it shows that if you can accomplish it from what you did on that scale, other people could accomplish it.
Yeah, and if you look now, like, we're super successful in a sport that basically threw me out, right? Like, there was a time in 2015 where if someone would say, look in their crystal ball and say, is there a way for Tom Danielson to be in the sport of cycling? People would be like, no chance, right?
First opened up those classes, were the people like, hey, I'm Tom, and they walked right out?
Well, we didn't do classes, right? So
you did the first ones?
The camps. I mean, people had to sign up. But, you know, there wasn't as many people signing up at first. And I think the reason was that people were just wondering, like, who is this guy? Like, is he telling the truth? Is he whatever? And I think once, you know, word of mouth is powerful, and action is everything. So if you're out there doing it, you're actually helping people. Like, there's no – you just can't say – if you truly authentically are it, you can't say, like, no.
What's going to be great is, like, the big cycling companies are going to probably purchase your whole system and your whole method. So
You're not going to
sell out?
We'll buy those guys, man.
Now you're talking. So you a man that was once blackballed from the industry – and the sport is now pretty much dominating it on such an innovative level. So take advantage. We're talking with Tom Danielson here, and a remarkable story and what he's done with his adversity and now his business and, you know, riding in the Tour de France, a 21-day race. We could do a whole podcast and probably what that experience was like. 21 days? Who does a race for 21 days?
The crazy professional cyclists, I guess. I mean, the human body is incredible, and you know, the way that you're able to train it and take care of it and get it and things you can accomplish with it is mind-blowing. And, you know, I think the Tour de France truly is the hardest sporting event in the world. It's 21 days. That means 21 consecutive races. So the way it works is each day is its own individual race. Generally, you race from one point to another point, right? So you're covering the span of France. We go so fast that we like cover France and then go in the middle and then go back up to the top and then come back down. So, but each day is over 100 miles, usually, like, you know, 140 miles or something like this, with mountains and very, 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 very challenging. Do all the famous Pyrenees climbs, the famous Alps climbs, and then we even have time trials where you have to do an effort on your own. But it's an incredible experience. You know, growing up, I had no idea that I'd ever be good enough to do something like that. And then being able to do it, and I end up finishing eighth overall. There's only been a few Americans that have been top 10. So that was really cool. And got to stand on the Champs-Élysées, our team, which is like the big finale. Our team won that year. The team won the team competition, so it's awesome to be on the podium there for that. And it's definitely one of the coolest accomplishments on a bike I've ever done.
That's pretty amazing what you're saying, you know, what the body can do and the limits that you push. So congratulations on having that experience and that accomplishment. So that's awesome, and they can never take that away from you. So that's in stone in history. I'm just so marveled by your story, man, and it's actually really inspiring, and it's cool that you now have become a role model, which you were before, but now you're even a role model to so many people even outside of the sport.
Thank you. It's like I said, it's all about transformation and change, and, you know, just learning how to pivot and mm-hmm. and find different directions and use really your passion. So my passion was to inspire people.
I'm inspired. I'm fired up right now.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is actually I can share a story real quick. The defining moment. So I had a moment where I chose to not not legally fight my situation and try to get back in the sport. I actually chose to just pivot, you know, walk away from it, and then start coaching full time. So I was sat in Tucson with one of our groups, and the last day of our camp that we were doing, we did a uphill time trial. And so at the time, I was really angry still from everything that happened to me. I trained my butt off. I was planning on going back to racing right away, and I was really, really fit. So the last day, we do this time trial, and time trial is basically an individual effort, right? So it's kind of like from point A to point B, go as hard as you can, but there's no group or Peloton or anything like that. So I set the group off kind of slowest to fastest, and I would always start last, and I, you know, dominated this. You know, I went so fast up this climb, fastest I've ever ridden, up the mountain's called Mount Lemmon. We just did it up the bottom part, and I did like the best power I've ever done in my career. I pass each person along the way up, and I cheer them on, and I say something real quick, hey, like, you know, work on this body position or up your cadence or whatever, and then I would take off and go to the next person. And at the top, right, like I would stop and then ride back down and then cheer and ride up next to each person when we got to the top. That night at dinner, I expected kind of everybody to like look at my time, right? Because I did a really, really fast time. We went around the room and I thought, okay, let's share the highlight. You guys share a story from today. So each athlete shared basically that they were so inspired by me being next to them and teaching them or giving them some pointers. Like each person said that was the highlight of their ride. And not one person saw my like super fast time or high power or mentioned how fast I passed them or whatever. No one cared. Every person was touched by the time that I spent with them and the information that I shared with them. So that night I went to my wife and I said, you know what? Like, this is it. I'm out.
Found it.
This is it. I'm, you know, even if I go back to the sport, I'm not going to help anyone. I'm not going to inspire anyone. Like, there's always going to be this weird thing over me or whatever. It's just like, let's just pivot. Let's go all in this new direction. And I love it. People love it. Like and this is my why, right?
That's a
like
great
I want to
defining
teach.
Moment. Yeah. Yeah, great defining moment.
So that was it. That was when I made the decision, and you know, it was definitely the best decision. I mean, it's tough, obviously, like to have that stuff happen to anyone. I mean, I'm sure the listeners, you guys out there, you all have your moment where you know something bad happened, whether it was your fault or it wasn't, and you wish it didn't happen, but. I mean, if you go back and reverse engineer it and see like the person that you are now because of that, and then there's still time too. If you're still like holding on to something and you're like, man, I just want to find a way to move past, just like look at it, like feel it, and then burn with it, right? Like it's okay to keep it with you. It happened to you. It's a scar. Scars are beautiful. They tell a story, right? And you know, use that and move forward. Don't try to hide from it. Don't try to run from it. Don't try to explain it anymore. Just take it and be like, hey, this is my fire. Let's go.
Dude, you shared some great golden nuggets, and that's what we call them on our show. We always ask our guests, you know, who have lived different lifestyles and experiences to share their wisdom and their golden nuggets to our viewers and listeners. And that's all you've done this whole episode. So we're appreciative of it. And fantastic stuff and remarkable story. And we play one fun game actually with all our guests. So we want to make sure before we get you out of here, we want to make sure you get to experience what we call word for word. And we're going to say a word, an object, a name. You just say the first word that comes to your mind. All you have to be is brutally honest. You understand the rules?
Okay.
All right. Word for word. Here we go. We're going to play word for word now with Tom Danielson, professional cyclist. Producer, give me that background game show music we play. There it is. There it is. Okay, you ready for word for word? Say the first word that comes to your mind. You ready?
I don't know if I'm ready for this.
Do it. First word that comes to your mind. Don't lie either. Connecticut.
East Lyme.
Mountain.
Colorado.
Tricycle.
My son.
Pillar.
Roof.
Bass.
Rapala.
Health.
Nutrition.
Focus.
I don't know. Clarity.
Italy.
Giro.
Longmont.
My home.
Utah.
Race.
Cinch.
Awesomeness.
Lance.
Intense.
And that is word for word with Tom Danielson. You got 100%. You passed. Congratulations. Excellent job there. You know, we give all our guests, actually, when they play word for word, you get a piece of actual edible gold. You get to eat a little piece of gold with me.
All right.
Shall you try a little piece? Are you scared?
I mean, I'm definitely scared.
Don't be scared. It's awesome. It's better on the way out. Take your piece.
All right. Thank you.
And I eat a piece with all my guests. So a little piece of gold just to fill your body with pure gold energy and aura.
We're really eating this?
Cheers. It's in. Oh, it's so good. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't
take a little nibble.
I was taught to not take candy from strangers, but definitely I was taught to not take gold from people.
They never told you to eat gold, man. Seriously, a remarkable story, though, talking to you and truly a role model and inspiration and being able to overcome adversity. And you know, after talking to you, man, I have that burn now, though, I'm telling you, because there's so many things where you're like, it isn't your fault, but just own it and move on. Don't dwell. You know, just so many golden nuggets you shared with us. We're really, really appreciative. Great stuff, man. And viewers and listeners, make sure you go right to his website, Cinch Cycling. It'll bring you right to the app. Take advantage of this. And what I love about the whole thing is not just for cyclists, not just for athletes or sports. I'm saying business professionals, from baby boomers to young athletes and everyone kind of in between, could take advantage of your pillars too and your whole kind of cornerstones of life.
Yeah, we have a book coming out in March, so that's a book on this whole system, so people can use it in their own lives. Maybe they're not ready to sign up for coaching or be part of the program, but it's a new way for people to share and enjoy the information. And then I'm writing another book called Ascend that's on this transformation process that I kind of shared with you guys. So look for that.
Yeah, definitely do that. And also follow him on his podcast. Subscribe to that, which is The Process Podcast. So we want to plug that for you.
The Process with Cinch Cycling.
Got it.
Okay.
Process Cinch Cycling Podcast. So Tom Danielson, thank you so much for your time joining us on the Talk Golden to Me video podcast show. Remarkable story. I think I've said probably about 8 times because it just blows my mind what happened to you, what you were doing, and where you're at now, and what you've done with it all. So truly an inspiration. Viewers and listeners, we, of course, always appreciate your time. Go follow him on Instagram, download the app, support, of course, our guests, like, subscribe, do all that stuff. It gives us the ability to bring on wonderful guests like Tommy D here onto the show, man. So again, thank you all. And that is another episode. So I'm the law office of Berman Berman here in our studios. Thank you for joining us. Tommy D, say goodbye to them. We're out of here.
All right. See you guys. Thank you.
Goodbye.